I'm going to be talking again about renewal. Mary Rose Roberts had the first talk this month, and she spent a lot of time talking about one of my favorite subjects, which is gardening. And what I really enjoyed about her talk was she laced it liberally with imagery, and it was so easy. I wish I'd seen the presentation that that went along with it, but she's a wonderful speaker. And if you weren't here at the last meeting, I highly recommend going online and downloading the talk. It really was great. I was originally, if I had remembered my books, I was going to have a reading done on the subject of renewal that Margaret Stortz had written. Margaret Stortz is a retired United Center's minister who, every time I read something she's written, it touches my heart. And she said that nature is a wonderful teacher. And it tells us in life when we need to scale back and take things easy, when we need to realign ourselves and recuperate so that when the earth's growing season arrives, we're ready to go. And that includes ourselves, not only plants, but ourselves, if we're listening to ourselves. And so, as you know, I do a lot of the scheduling for our talks during the year, and I deliberately selected the subject of renewal because I don't know why, but I had this image in my mind that it would feel like a month-long trip to a day spa. And I'm sad to report that it wasn't quite like that. I've been very busy the past 6 months or so. I've been in grad school, and I have also been, I'm part of the planning for the Tacoma Park Folk Festival, and we decided we were going to totally restructure. So a lot of that I did myself. It took a lot of time, and many of you know that my son's been ill, and he's been hospitalized several times over the winter. And so I've lost a great deal of my get up and go, and I didn't find over the month in preparing for this that I was getting up and going until I started really thinking about what the term renewal means. And I first thought, you know, for me, one of the ways to get going on a talk is to play with the word renewal. And I kept thinking, renewal, renewal, what does it mean? And I remembered the verse from Romans 12, which is, "Do not imitate the way of the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may discern what is good and acceptable and the perfect will of God." And I thought, wow, I think that's apropos to me right now, because I definitely needed to renew my mind on a lot of subjects, including rest. So then I thought about other things that we renew, like driver's licenses. For some of us, we renew our practitioner licenses every 2 years. Some people renew their wedding vows over time. And I began to see, as I thought about all the things that we renew, it really is about resetting intentions. And every time we do this, we've got experience in back of us. So, for instance, if I'm renewing my practitioner license, I already have, this year it'll be 10 years as a practitioner. Renewing it, I think back on my 10 years, what I've accomplished as I put together my package for my license renewal, and I think about, well, what is it as I'm renewing my license? Why do I want to renew it? Because it does cost a little money, and it also means that I'm committing myself to working as a practitioner for a couple more years. And so I'm actually renewing my commitment as a practitioner. I'm not just going in and saying, well, here's my paperwork and I'll think about it. Most of us, I believe, probably, I don't know about you, Dennis, but I think Connie does, we think about what it is that will offer meaning to our practice over the next couple of years. So the term renewal began to take on the flavor of commitment or intention or deciding to act in a certain way, and it's like stepping into a river. because the river keeps flowing and certain things in our lives keep flowing. But if we step out for a moment and then step back in, the river's in a different place. And Holmes says at the beginning of the section for this month, he says that whatever the mind holds to and firmly believes in, it forms a new pattern of thought within its creative mind. And so whatever thought is held in the mind tends to take outward form in a new creation. So, this is a new creation. I'm going to talk about sleeping. Because that's what needed renewal for me this month. And I realized that I've been hearing a lot from people that want to think and talk about sleeping better than they have been doing. And so I began reading about it. I have a good friend, his name's David, who told me about this book called Lights Out. Mm-hmm. And in it, I began to renew my thinking about the subject of sleeping. For instance, before there was electricity, what did people do? They usually went to bed, right, when the sun went down. There wasn't any fresh fruit in the wintertime, if you're living in this area. There were no computers. So basically, life was very different. And so we've become accustomed to making our bodies stay up long past when they should stay past, and we're not eating according to seasonal changes. And there are some studies that show that if you eat according to what's readily available in your local area by the season, your body is expecting that. For instance, in the wintertime, our metabolism slows down a little bit. And so winter, you know, as we all know, is a time for rest. Some plants go into hibernation. Trees go into hibernation. They drop their leaves. But really what they're doing is they're resting and they're gathering up strength for the future, for the spring, and being ready to go again. And animals frequently will go and take a long nap as well, because what they're trying to do is they're trying to conserve energy. I don't know about you, but when I was a child, we used to be outside all day long. When we weren't in school, we'd be outside after school. My mother would say, just go on outside. And how many of you had a mother that would say, I want you in by the time the streetlights come on? Yeah? Right. If you grew up in a place with streetlights. So, you know, and even as children, maybe not so much today, but as children, we grew up accustomed to kind of following the rising and the setting of sun, because when the sun went down, we had to come in the house, and typically our parents would make us go to bed so they could get some peace. So sleep has the ability to heal us on many levels. It's essential for your mental health. It kind of resets the brain. It also it contributes to our beauty. And we wake up in the morning, we feel refreshed. It's necessary for our body, and it should be a priority in our lives to get adequate amount of sleep. Now, the book I read, Lights Out, said that you should be getting about 9 hours of sleep a night. Exactly. How many regularly get 9 hours of sleep a night?
Not what I do in a week.
Okay.
Week. Ouch.
All right. Well, I know that when I don't get enough sleep, I start slowing down. I start getting irritable. I lose my temper quicker. I'm just not my sweet self. And my reaction time slows. I get forgetful. And I feel disconnected, which I've pretty much felt the last few months. I felt kind of like it was hard when I sat down and closed my eyes to feel any kind of connection with Source. And so that's why this thinking about sleeping has really been helpful for me. So I started doing a little reading, and I thought I'd share some of the recommendations I got for getting a good night's sleep, because it might be helpful to you. I'd be happy to send some of this out if you'd like. I think it's a lot of fun to think about how we can get more rest in our lives. There are three basic steps. First of all, your sleeping room needs to be set up appropriately. You should have a routine when you're going to bed, and you may want to make some lifestyle changes. So in terms of setting up your sleeping area, it's best to sleep in complete darkness, which is difficult if you live in an urban area. There may be street lights, you know, the moon may be shining in. We have electronic things. I don't know who sleeps with a phone. You can take a picture of me. there may be a phone, for instance, you leave your phone charging by the bed at night. Well, a lot of those things have to go, and what really has to go is your alarm clock. Yes. It produces a lot of light. So, for instance, I have an alarm clock that it glows at night, and I've moved it far away from my bed, and I cover it up so I can't see it at night. And I just, you know, I wake up, hopefully, you know, I wake up to the alarm clock, but I'm not awake in the middle of the night trying to see what the numbers are. They also recommend covering your windows with drapes if you can. And if that doesn't work, then get a sleeping mask. Those are available. And what happens is that light tends to signal your brain that it's time to wake up and get going, and it starts preparing your body for action. So the less light you have in your room, the more deep your rest is going to be. Keeping the temperature in your bedroom shouldn't be more than 70 degrees Fahrenheit. When you sleep, your body's internal temperature tends to drop about 4 hours after you fall asleep. And so a cooler bedroom is more conducive to sleep since it mimics your body's natural temperature drop. Now, if you have a Gauss meter, you can check to see if there are any electromagnetic fields in your bedroom. Those will interfere with the pineal gland and the production of melatonin and serotonin, and it may have other effects as well. There are people that could check for that. But for instance, I have my router for my wireless network down in the basement, and I sleep a couple stories up, as far away as I can. I don't have a television in my room, and the only electronic thing I have is my alarm clock. And I have a couple lights, of course. Move your alarm clock, as I said, away from your bed. It should be at least 3 feet away from you, unless you have a wind-up alarm. And those don't typically light up at night. Don't use a loud alarm clock. If you have something that goes boing first thing in the morning, or if the music comes on really loudly, you may want to turn it down, because what that does is it jolts your body out of a restful state. And it's recommended that you may want to consider getting alarm clocks that gradually lighten up, that mimic the sun's growing light, and those are available. Or you can get a clock radio that has an AM, FM radio. You know, start listening to the radio in the morning, but quietly. And reserve your bed only for sleeping, and not watching television, not studying, not doing things that stress your brain out. In terms of developing a bedtime ritual, get to bed as early as possible, and your body will be recharging most effectively between the hours of 11 p.m. and 1 a.m., David.
That's when I get up.
I know. I know, that's why I mentioned it. What happens at that time of night, your gallbladder is dumping toxins. It's busy doing that. And so if you're awake, the toxins go back into your liver, and that can further disrupt your health, which is another reason you want to be in bed then. And don't be changing your bedtime around. And I have a habit of staying up a little later on the weekend and sleeping later. And I've realized that what I do is I put myself into jet lag automatically by changing my sleeping and waking times. And so it's better to be on a schedule all 7 days of the week. It'll make it easier to get up during the week. Establish a bedtime routine. You may want to meditate. You may want to talk with your partner. You may want to get a massage. You may want to use aromatherapy. But find something that makes you feel relaxed. Don't drink any fluids within 2 hours of going to bed. And that means you won't need to get up and go to the bathroom. And by the way, go to the bathroom before you go to bed. That's good. You got that one right? Doing something right, because that lessens the chances that you'll be woken up and needing to get up and go in the middle of the night. Here's an interesting one. Eat a high-protein snack a few hours before you go to bed, and that provides the tryptophan that will be needed for your melatonin and serotonin production. And if you accompany that with a small piece of fruit, what that'll do is help the tryptophan cross the blood-brain barrier. So it amplifies the effect of the protein. Avoid before-bed snacks, especially if they're grains or sugars, because those raise your blood sugar and they tend to delay sleep. And you may wake up a little bit after that if your blood, you know how if you go on a sugar high and then all of a sudden it drops? Well, if it drops in the middle of the night when you're trying to sleep, you may be woken up because your blood sugar is really low. They recommend taking a hot bath or shower or sauna before you go to bed. Now, I'd never heard this one before. And what that does is if you raise your body temperature in the late evening, it falls at bedtime, and that makes it easier to sleep because that signals to your, the temperature drop when you get out of the hot shower or sauna, it signals to your body that it's time to get ready for bed because you're starting to, your temperature's lowering. You may want to wear socks to bed. Your feet are often the part of your body that gets coldest, and you may wake up in the middle of the night with cold feet. You may want to wear an eye mask. And at least an hour before you go to bed, put your work away. And this is something that I have been really guilty of, is I will keep working on something until it's way past my bedtime, and then I'll lie down and expect to go to sleep. And then I wonder why it's not happening. And that gives your body a chance to relax and your mind to kind of unwind and let go of the things you've been working on. Here's another one that's interesting. No TV right before bed, so don't be watching the 10 o'clock news on Fox television before you go to bed. So get the television out of your bedroom, and television in general will stimulate your mind, and it also disrupts your pineal gland function, which is necessary for melatonin production. You might want to listen to relaxation CDs. There are a number of CDs out there that mimic the delta brainwave, which is the brainwave of sleep. Dr. Jeffrey Thompson has some available, for example, that are very effective. Read something spiritual or uplifting. That will work every time. You could read you could read 365 Science of Mind. Oh my goodness, you'd have a little bit to read every day. And another thing you could do is you could journal. One of the best ways to unwind is to write a gratitude journal for all the things that have happened during the day. And so the other thing you may want to consider is those mystery novels that you can't put down. You really need to put it away at least an hour before bedtime, because I don't know about you, but I don't want to put it down, and I'll sometimes stay up way into the wee hours of the morning if I'm in a really good book. So I need, I've learned if I'm going to be reading something pretty racy, I have to do it earlier in the day. And then some lifestyle changes, and there aren't as many of these. If you're taking any kind of medications, the best thing is to take as little as possible. Sleeping is actually pretty helpful. Getting adequate rest, I found, is helpful for reducing instances of diabetes, for improving your metabolism, for improving your blood pressure. There's any number of things. You may find just sleeping in general more is going to reduce any reliance you may have on prescription drugs. And, of course, never do anything unless your doctor says to or unless you feel guided. Next one is avoid caffeine, certainly later in the day. Caffeine's not, it's not evil by any means, but particularly if you're drinking coffee, say, after 6 p.m. or something like that, it may be keeping you awake at night. So the last you want to be drinking a cup of tea or coffee with caffeine is probably early afternoon. And understand, for instance, if you're taking diet pills or something, these may have caffeine in them too. It may make it hard to sleep. Avoid alcohol. It may make you feel drowsy, but that's a short-lived effect, and sometimes you'll wake up a few hours later and be unable to fall asleep, particularly if you're hungover. It also keeps you from entering the deeper stages of sleep, which is what's really needed for mental and physical restoration. Make sure you're getting enough exercise. Take a class with John. I understand that yoga is wonderful. Don't do exercise right before you sleep, or it may keep you awake. And lose any excess weight. Let's see what else. And avoid foods you may be sensitive to. And some people are really sensitive to sugars and grains, that type of thing. Kind of know what it is that may trigger your body to keep it awake. And lastly, if you're having trouble with sleeping, you may want to check your adrenals, go to a good naturopath, and find out that, you may find that insomnia is caused by adrenal stress, which, I've started taking an adrenal supplement, and I have noticed I am sleeping better. That's great. So this is not by any means an exhaustive list. And that book I read has a lot more information, both on nutrition, eating by the season, and on sleeping 9 hours a night, and the medical basis for doing that. But I think there's nothing better than waking up in the morning and feeling like you're ready to go and you're enthusiastic. So thank you.
Thank you.
See the title, Judy?
The name of the book?
Yes, please.
Lights Out.
Thank you.
What supplement are you taking?
It's an adrenal supplement from Nature's Sunshine. That's what they call their adrenal supplement.
Thank you.
Thank you.